everything is about a budgeting process. Mm-hmm. And just the way you budget for a company, you should also budget for your own finances. Always try and keep your money in something that earns it money. Let me tell you, money will always find a use for itself. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. money is money. Mm-hmm. It's just about the discipline.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Financially Incorrect. I am your host, Barack. And remember, as usual, this podcast is proudly sponsored by FX Pesa. If you'd like to learn about trading, if you'd like to open up a trading account, please check out the links in the description box. They do offer also trading classes at all of their locations. So if you check out any FX Pesa office, you'd be able to go and understand and learn a bit more about trading. This month is a very special month for me personally. This month of April, for those who don't know, is Autism Awareness Month. Personally, I am affected, well, not affected per se, but I have a nephew who's autistic. And as a family, we've had to deal with understanding what autism is. We've had to deal with understanding how to, you know, properly give care for a child who's autistic and begin to map out a life for them. Last week, actually, over the Easter break, my family and I climbed Mount Kenya to Point Lenana, sort of to try and raise awareness for autism. And the climb to Mount Kenya was sort of symbolizing just how difficult and challenging it can be for caregivers around autism. So we're going to be talking a bit more about that throughout the month, this month of April. But just, I guess, just to start us off, just for you guys to be aware, it is Autism Awareness Month. Autism is a condition that affects a child development process and their brain work a bit differently, the way that they learn. Some of them can be verbal or nonverbal, among other things. But yeah, so this is just like a teaser to just say, be aware that Autism Awareness Month for people. And if you know someone who's a caregiver or a parent who's going through autism or taking care of a child who has autism, I can assure you it's not simple. I watched my twin brother turn into a superhero parent taking care of my nephew when he has episodes and things like that. And it's definitely not easy. So if you know someone who's there, who's dealing with a child who has autism or a caregiver who gives someone who gives care to people who have autism, please give them a shout out because it is not easy. Today, I have with me Geoffrey Odundo. I don't know now whether I say that you're retired, you're official.
Semi-retired.
The former CEO of the Nairobi Securities Exchange. I think we're going to have a really, really fascinating conversation. But welcome to Financially Incorrect.
Thank you
for gracing us.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting.
This is the third time that we've tried to do this. So it's like three times the charm now.
I tell you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
So I'll kick off this interview with how literally our conversation started. So I walked in here and everybody who watches Financially Incorrect will see me today in like a suit and tucked in pants. I'm even calling it a suit, like a shirt and tucked in pants. And it's very formal. So I walk in and Geoffrey's like, I can see like you're casual. And I was like, what do you mean? This is very formal for me. And he said, this is formal for you. And I said, yeah. And so he was talking about how this for him is casual. What he's dressed in is casual. And I am just absolutely fascinated by I guess, the fact that you consider this casual. Mm. So, I mean, at what point did you feel like it was ingrained into you that wearing a suit and tie is what is formal and this is considered casual?
Yeah. Thank you, Barack. In fact, I like that's a good way to start this.
Yeah.
So, for 31 years, I mentioned to you, I was in the financial services sector.
Yeah.
And my first job was an insurance underwriter, and it was just about formal dressing. Mm-hmm. More very European kind of dressing then. And that went on even as I went to the transition to the investment banking mm-hmm. side, the trading side, and ultimately the NSC. Mm-hmm. I've never gone to work without a tie.
Yeah.
In fact, I have a lot of ties. I could donate them out, you know?
So, yeah.
And I've tried different types of ties, the wide ones, the slim ones, and everything. Yeah, so it was more of the culture then, which I've seen totally transformed mm-hmm. Over the years. Mm-hmm. My first interaction with a non-Thai environment was at the NSC, because mm-hmm. I found a very informal dress code, but I still had to I still found myself continuing to wear ties.
Yeah.
But I introduced, a semi sort of formal dressing.
Okay.
Where once a week you could actually go in fully jeans.
Jeans and a t-shirt.
But no t-shirts.
Oh, no t-shirt.
Even if it's a t-shirt, it does have a collar.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So it's, should I say it's more of the historical background that mm-hmm. we all came from.
Mm-hmm.
The culture has changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. I think with all this tech environment coming mm-hmm. in, and we see all these American, this actually is an American way of dressing.
Right.
Yeah, where it's based in this informal way.
Right.
It's really gaining currency. And yeah, so that's the background.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, for you, do you think there's a direct correlation between the way that you dress and your career and the way people perceive you?
Mm.
Or, and even more directly, a correlation between dressing and money?
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I think the dressing actually sort of, I think it reflects a bit of a seriousness, right? Mm-hmm. If you go for a formal meeting mm-hmm. with the CEO
mm-hmm.
appearing in a T-shirt, mm-hmm. They'll never take you seriously.
Yeah.
They want to see some formal. It's like a culture. It's like a, you know, sort of a statement. They're making a statement that actually you've taken that meeting seriously.
Yeah.
Or that appointment seriously.
Yeah.
And so you'll slowly see that that being the trend. But what I've seen more recently is that it's kind of wearing off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, today most corporates are informal. Most organizations have actually adapted it. Even government.
Mm-hmm.
Government, actually, there's a lot of informality.
Mm-hmm.
But they like the African culture of dressing.
Yeah.
So I think it's becoming, the trend is changing.
Yeah.
It's coming, moving away from that stiffness to a bit more flexibility.
Yeah.
But what I've seen again is that the people with money
yeah.
are very informal. I mean, they dress very informally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I meet my key investors, they're not in ties and suits.
Right.
It reflects that you've arrived, you know, in a way. So you can tell somebody's still in a hustle and
yeah.
the person who is more of a, has arrived. Yeah.
yeah.
So I've seen that happen. What I've also seen is that there's a bit more high productivity when people are relaxed,
mm-hmm.
when people are informally dressed.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it. I also experienced that.
Mm-hmm.
You feel the environment is a bit, is more open, more, mm-hmm. less rigid.
Yeah.
So you feel it, you enjoy the job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's getting there.
That's really interesting. I'm curious about, I mean, if you're talking about like saying meeting a lot of your key investors and they're in T-shirts and rather and dressed rather informally,
yes.
what the sort of difference is or where the mind shift changes, where if I'm going to meet a CEO and I'm dressed informally, your first impression might be, oh, this person's not taking this meeting seriously, or is not taking this whatever we're doing seriously. But if it's a person at a certain level, then it's fine for them to be able to wear, you know, informally.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, where does that shift happen?
I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
I think, first of all, I think it's still a very African mentality.
Mm-hmm.
We're still stuck in that historical formal dressing stuff.
Yeah.
One time I went to meet JP Morgan.
Okay.
In the UK,
mm-hmm.
and we arrived there on a roadshow. We were fully suited mm-hmm. in three piece and ties and everything.
Right.
And we meet these two chaps who are controlling almost 3 trillion shillings
mm-hmm.
in as part of their portfolio.
Yeah.
And they're so informal. No ties. No suits.
Yeah.
And we were like, "Oops, have we overdressed?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, no, feel free, guys, relax."
Mm.
And you can see they're relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way they're talking to you is mm-hmm. like there's no pressure.
Yeah.
As we are there, we are stiff with a heavy suitcase and presentations.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's becoming very different
mm-hmm.
Going forward. I think the more successful you become, the more relaxed you become.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What else do you have to prove?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing else to prove.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got it.
Yeah.
So what do I need to? Everybody should respond to me on how I move. Look at the big guys, the
okay.
Zuckerbergs, the,
yeah.
Bill Gates.
Yeah.
So informal. I mean, and people, you know, respect them. So I think the more you have, the more you can dictate what you want to do. And
that's really interesting.
The trend, yeah.
I mean, and I'm like, okay, so for us who have less, we still have to, we still have things to prove. So we need to dress.
Yes. You come from a meeting, you're going to have a suit and go back.
Okay, anyway, it's a weird paradox, I guess.
I tell you, just one last one.
Yeah.
So we had this tech event.
Okay.
I was told dress
down.
Down.
Yeah.
So I dressed down, sneakers, t-shirt, mm-hmm. easy jacket, etc. The clients dressed up because they were coming to meet the CEO of the NSC.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are we opposite?
Yeah.
You know? So my chairman, he says, I dressed in the middle.
Okay.
So, so it's a perception issue. It's still very African.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I guess, anyway, I guess I'll leave it to society to, you know, try and figure it out as we move forward. So I guess let me get into it, into your money journey, right? When did you realize that money makes the world go round? In your personal experience, whether it was as you're growing up, whether it was as an adult, when did you realize money is sort of money makes the world go round?
Right. So my interest in money started when I was doing my A levels, Form 5 and 6, and I used to go bank money for my dad at then Commercial Bank of Africa, and I would meet tellers and the people working the banks and. I was always fascinated how money moves, you know, the ching and the way they count the money. And I just saw that this currency is a very important commodity. Everything, because you'd rush, you're told bank this, bank that, talk to the manager. And everybody was so smartly dressed. The premises are beautiful. You're offered so much courtesy. And I said, this must be the key thing.
Yeah.
This must be what drives everything.
Yeah.
So I told myself I wanted to be a banker.
Yeah.
In fact, I wanted to be a teller.
That's what to actually deal with the actual
to
cash.
Own the commodity.
Yeah.
Because it was just a fascinating experience.
Yeah.
And so working with that, and of course I was doing economics in my A levels, and I went on to do it in university as well. And everything is about economy from the word economics. Everything. It's a demand supply issue. You know, there's nothing that revolves without the economy.
Yeah.
So I said, this must be a very important science. Why don't I consider doing it?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I'll control you all.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. So, so I realized a very important aspect of it. The economy is very fascinating. The subject is very interesting. And, I've gone into different spheres of it, and I can't tell you.
Yeah.
Without financial services.
Yeah.
There's really nothing happening in the world.
Yeah.
It controls the world.
Yeah.
When it crashes, you crush.
Yeah.
When it rises, you rise. Right now, we're experiencing a good time because the dollar is doing well. What is that? Money.
Yeah.
When the dollar was too expensive, again, what was happening? Everybody was sort of depressed. Everything was slowing down in the country.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's how I interacted. So, Form 6 for me was a
turning point.
And that informed my career choice. And then my first investment experience was in 96 when I put my money in Kenya Airways, then a blue chip company, still a blue chip company, and made some money.
Yeah.
And I realized, wow, this is an interesting life.
Okay.
And it's been that since.
Okay. Yeah. I want to ask you, I mean, because you've, I guess, worked in the financial industry for 31 years, like you said. In your experience, in that sense, when have you seen money move something, you know, where I guess if you are as a layman, it would be that would be really difficult to achieve, or that'd be really difficult to, yeah, for someone to be able to do, but money becomes the solution and it, you know, very quickly removes the roadblocks that are there. A story that you can give us.
Yeah, so in 2006, I was sitting in my office on a Friday, extremely broke, it's raining out there, nowhere to go because I have no money.
Yeah.
I asked myself, I'm a trader and I'm an investment manager then. How come I'm not making money for myself? So I said, no, I must look at the stock sheet again. I must look for the gap. I must look for which stock will make me a millionaire.
Yeah.
This is, it's a Damascus moment for me then.
Yeah.
So I sit and I look at the worksheet and I look and I see one company that's been lying very quiet. I say, well, what's happening? What does this company do? So I said, oh, yeah. So the company was East African Cables. And I said, and Kibaki had come in and there was all this boon about construction. And I said, all these houses will need cables, right? Right? I said, yeah, so let's figure it out. So I open, I see, oops, there's been a new acquisition. The former shareholders have sold out a block to a new team of people. And this new team happened to be a group called Transcentury. I said, who are Transcentury? I open them up again. I see some interesting chaps here. Said, they must be knowing something here.
Yeah.
Construction, with a bit of that, putting those together, I decided this is a stock to buy. Then to study shillings. So I got a couple of my friends and we put in some 3 million shillings. And we had a good chunk of shares. 2 weeks after that, it crashed to 11. And my friends thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
Told me, what the hell did you put the money into? What is all this?
Yeah.
But you're an expert.
Yeah.
And I said, guys, can you just
let's give it time. Because at that point, you'd lost
20 shillings
down. On each, yeah.
On each stock.
On each stock, right? Yeah.
And a month later, it recovered to 30.
Mm-hmm.
And then a small bull run began in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And this stock rallied to 90 in a month.
Mm-hmm.
And my guys thought I was a genius. I said, guy, can we exit?
Yeah.
I said, no.
Not yet.
Party's still on. No. And we went on and on.
Yeah.
It had 150. We started getting jitters. It turned to 300. That was also like 10 times. Come on, guys. Shouldn't we?
Yeah.
We held on. We were brave.
Yeah.
We exited at 600.
Wow.
20 times.
Wow. How long was that period?
I think it was 3 months. It was not more than 3 months because it was going up 10% per day. Eventually, we exited at 600, and we ran for the hills. Take the money and don't bring it back.
Yeah.
We took it off. Some went to land. We went to buy land. Some guy went to buy apartments. So that was a real move, you know?
I said, yeah. Wow.
You know?
Yeah, that's in 3 months.
In 3 months.
How many times, I mean, in your career, how many times can you see instances like those? How many times does something like that happen?
That was phenomenal because that's the time we had a lot of IPOs and mm-hmm. a lot of pressure money coming in. People mm-hmm. were excited about the market.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen anything like that since then.
Mm-hmm.
What we've seen are certain spikes and then dip, spikes and dip, but mm-hmm. nothing with the bull run that we saw in the 2006-2008 era.
Yeah.
It can happen.
Yeah.
It will happen.
Yeah.
So I think it's it makes sense.
I mean, your friends must have been. Do they adore you to date?
Oh, I'm still a hero in their eyes, man. They live in their houses, which I am sure they want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That
is, so money can make a difference. In
yeah.
fact, we always say that, there's a saying
mm-hmm.
in Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
It says, make money when there's blood in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So we've come from a very bear run,
mm-hmm.
you know, where nobody wanted to touch the market.
Yeah.
But see what has happened in just 2 weeks mm-hmm. when the banks were releasing results.
Mm-hmm.
Stocks like Safaricom have moved from 13 to 19,
mm-hmm.
you know, Standard Chartered from 160 to 200.
Mm-hmm.
Now look at those gains happening in just 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
But how many still see it as there's that disconnect
yeah.
I never really get.
Yeah.
People don't like making money because it's there. I mean, it's there. You're told invest when it's low, sell when it's high.
Yeah. It's that simple.
It's simple.
But let me ask you, right? So for even this stock that you've told us that went from 30 to 600, I mean, when it's getting to 90, when it's getting to 100, when it's getting to 150,
yes.
I mean, what's the thinking around, this is tomorrow we might wake up and it's at 10, or, you know, how do you know when to hold on? And even when you exited at 600, did it continue to go up or yeah. was that the max?
It went to 9,000.
9,000?
No, 1,000.
Oh, 1,000.
1,000.
So there was another... And do you feel like, oh man, there's 400 bob left on the table?
We were just content. Said you never know.
You know,
you can never tell. That was good. It was a speculative run.
Yeah.
It makes a bit of sense. Yeah, so you've got a good question.
Yeah.
So for me, the rule of thumb is that anytime you're 25% up, just cream off a bit of it,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so that you never regret,
because mm-hmm.
you never know when the peak is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can never know. That was a risk we took.
Yeah,
but we were young.
Yeah,
we could afford it. We were young, we were brave. We could try a bit of that. I was telling your colleague before she walked in.
Yeah,
can I do it now?
Yeah,
I think my heart can stand the risk.
After starting to break your leg, give me my money.
I see the risks in a different way. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anything above 25% is a good deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I buy today 25% up, nothing to regret about.
Okay.
Which investment gives you that kind of return?
Yeah, and remember, you're talking about 3 months. Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible.
That's incredible. Mm. Okay. Yeah. What informed the way that you handle your finances and how you break down your expenses, I guess what you're paying for when you were paying fees for the girls, what informed your personal management of money?
Yeah. So for me, I think everything is about a budgeting process.
Uh-huh.
And just the way you budget for a company, you should also budget for your own finances.
Uh-huh.
So back in the day, I developed a very good template.
Uh-huh.
It had the worksheets that showed me my accounts, it showed me my projections. Mm-hmm. It showed me my future investments. Mm-hmm. And I've kept that worksheet to date. Mm-hmm. So every time I know how much of my salary comes in, mm-hmm. what goes into my expenses, what's the residue after that, I can even see my projections month on month to the end of the year mm-hmm. on how the incomes will be. Just assumptions, you mm-hmm. know? Yeah. So that's kept me on track mm-hmm. To avoid also going over indulging.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I do is I do a lot of my investments are checked off at the salary level.
Okay.
So my house loans, my savings to SACO mm-hmm. savings, I tell my employer check it off because mm-hmm. I can't keep money in my account. Mm-hmm. There's something mm-hmm. about money in my account finding... that, you know, shows me.
Yeah.
I can spend.
Yeah.
So I like spending the residue, whatever has been sent after yeah. all those things.
So, I mean, if you can share with us, how much is in your, what's it called? It's called a checking, your regular account. What's the maximum amount of money you keep in your regular account?
My salaries don't meet.
They don't meet?
They can't meet. If they meet, there's a problem. You're not investing your money efficiently.
Yeah.
If your salary last month's salary should not meet this month's salary. Why yeah. should they meet?
Yeah.
Invest it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I clear my account.
Yeah,
I don't keep any residue.
So you're investing, then you're paying expenses, then
yes, end of the month when I know the other salary is coming, yeah. this one must be cleared off.
Yeah,
yeah. If there's something else, put it in a call account or something. But yeah. You know, let me ask you.
Yeah.
How much money do you have in your M-Pesa?
Right now.
Yeah. You have some money in your M-Pesa.
I do.
Why are you keeping it there?
No, I mean, because literally paying a bill. Right now, as we speak, I have a thousand shillings on my M-Pesa.
Okay, that's a bit efficient. But most Kenyans
yeah.
keep a lot of money in M-Pesa lying idle or in their current accounts.
Yeah.
Lying idle. What is that money doing?
But what about your emergency fund? Or where do you keep your money for your emergencies?
You'll have a savings account.
Yeah.
And not even a savings account. You'll have a call account.
Okay.
Always try and keep your money in something that earns it money.
Yeah.
You know, every time you put money somewhere, it's earning interest.
Yeah.
It's the same way when you leave it in the current account, the bank is earning interest.
Yeah.
On zero interest balances.
Yeah.
Which constitutes almost 40% of total balances in banks today.
Yeah.
Are people who keep money idle. And they're trading with it.
Yeah.
People should learn to sweep this money into investments.
Yeah.
So tell your bank, no, put my money in a savings account or put it in a call account.
Mm.
Don't put my money in a current account.
Yeah.
It's your money. You know? And a call account can be called anytime.
Yeah.
Yeah, for emergencies. But if your salaries meet,
mm-hmm.
you're not efficient in your investments.
Yeah.
They should never meet.
Yeah.
You should find a clean balance. Zero account.
That's interesting. That is very interesting. I
In fact, my most troublesome time.
Yeah.
Is end of the month. End of the month is when I get most stressed.
What?
There are checkoffs, there are payments to be made. You must look for other payments to top up, to clear. Yeah. I love middle of the month.
Yeah.
There are no crisis mm-hmm. times. Crisis times, end of the month, because investments are shaking you all over the place.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Question. Because of the position that you had, I mean, your salary was talked about publicly. People knew how much
Did you see the top salaries in this country?
I've seen some of the Moyas, the Centums. Anyway, those I've seen them. But yours, I mean, wasn't it's, depressing. It's
like, you know, in the second half of the league table.
But anyway, so because I believe it's like 2 point something, if I'm not mistaken, right, or thereabout. 2.1. What is it like, first of all, to know that, I mean, everyone knows what your salary is, and therefore I can sit here, and so I didn't see what car you drove in, but I can see the car that you're driving and begin to make judgment calls on how you're spending your money. And even, you know, we talk about black tax in the African community. I mean, if I'm calling you to ask you for money, you're like, I don't have money. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Do you really not have money? Yeah.
Well, being a public listed company and getting your salaries disclosed,
yeah.
it's a bit of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can never tell anybody you don't have the money.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember one time going home and wife is like, you're earning that much. And I'm like, this much? It's not much. I mean, look at what the rest are earning. Look at all these huge salaries. But may as it be. I mean, we kind of got used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but of course, it does. It doesn't present a challenge. People think you can. You can't. You can't deny that you don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they don't know what expenses you have on this side.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, money will always find a use for itself.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never. The more you earn, the more you spend.
Yeah.
I mean, the more you desire. So you want, you're earning a million shillings, you want to buy a better car, you mm-hmm. want to buy a better house, mm-hmm. better things. So the expenditure also increases. So mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it sort of balances off.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Because you also want to improve your status or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sort of sense, a perception that you have it. Because imagine if I was earning 2 million shillings and I came in a VITS.
Mm-hmm.
You'd really think I'm a very, you know, mean guy. Huh?
I mean, they talk about, and I don't know, and I'm going to get the country wrong, but I know that this president in a South American country mm-hmm. who drives like a VW, like a Beetle, and lives in like a very small house and donates his salary to charity and stuff like that. So I wonder, like, did you feel pressure and do you feel pressure because of the position that you had? Yeah, to drive a certain car, to wear a certain watch, to wear a certain suit, and to be seen living in a certain place. And how difficult is it to, if that wasn't who you were, to stay true to being, I don't even know if the word is frugal, but just spend your money differently.
Yeah, I think the challenge we have is that there's a society expectation mm-hmm. of you that when you're going to be the CEO of the exchange, there's a certain way that you carry yourself, there's mm-hmm. a certain car that you drive, there's a certain there's certain places you should go to.
Mm-hmm.
It's a society expectation,
mm-hmm.
so you have to match to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there'll always be like, oops, the CEO of the exchange was seen in a VITS.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, eh. The exchange must be struggling, eh?
Mm.
So that society expectation creates a bit of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's really the case.
Yeah.
But I think we all try to stay true to ourselves. It's not like I started at the top. I mean, mm-hmm. I started my life in a one bedroom house.
Mm-hmm.
I went very systematically.
Okay.
One bedroom, uh-huh. one child. Two bedrooms, two children. Three bedrooms, three kids.
Uh-huh.
And then moving on, you know, from this side of town, because the school's on this side of town,
mm-hmm.
eventually building my own house.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very systematic progress, because you also want to see how you're moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think you just stay true to yourself,
mm-hmm.
only that now you've got to make some adjustments based on what the role carries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you feel like any of your employees or anyone who was working under you sort of critiqued you or criticized you for what you were making? Because, you know, you there are these certain work environments where people are like, oh, you know, so-and-so is being paid a lot of money and we are the ones who do all the work. Did you feel like you are good value for the money that you were being paid? And obviously, this is a difficult question to ask and it's subjective to answer. But did you feel like you were good value for the salary that you were making?
Of course, I was good value. I think how you make them appreciate it,
mm-hmm.
is they go to see the kind of the kind of role you play, the kind of job you do,
mm-hmm.
the kind of pressure you face.
Mm-hmm.
And what I always do is that I carry my colleagues to my meetings, mm-hmm. to my presentations, to all these pitches, that for them to appreciate what this job is all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a job that you're sitting in a comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with very delicate matters. You're dealing with very sensitive people.
Mm-hmm.
You're managing, so they see the kind of pressure you face.
Yeah,
and I've challenged them. I told them, anybody wants to sit on this seat? They say, oh hell no.
Yeah,
the job is looking crazy.
Yeah,
you know, markets are depressed. You get a video call. You know, your people are calling you. You're in the papers every day. You're being, you know. So they say, hey, this job is hectic.
Yeah.
So they kind of appreciate.
Yeah.
And say no. It's worth its price.
Yeah.
You just sit there, and you deal with it. So, and also I think what it does, it motivates you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for those who take it positively, they get motivated to try for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, when I left, most of my colleagues applied for the role.
Mm-hmm.
I was so impressed,
mm-hmm.
that, oops, yeah, they could actually think about becoming CEO.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I was so impressed that they did, you know. So it shows you they kind of aspire to it.
Okay.
It's very inspirational in a way. I think when you look at, first of all, let me just qualify the point that, mm-hmm. that, of course, yes, it does rank among high-paid people, mm-hmm. in the country, which is okay. But I think given the continuous importance of the role,
mm-hmm.
and people appreciation and the strategic importance of where it sits,
mm-hmm.
and benchmarking on the sector that we operate in,
yeah.
then I think you'd like to say, oops, I think it should actually be closer to what the upper middle quartile is doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in the financial services sector. You see the public salaries of the CEOs. Yeah. It's a huge figure, right?
Yeah.
And so we are still, we still lag behind compared to the financial services itself. So you want, always want to say it should be closer to that.
Okay.
And then there has to be an appreciation for it.
Yeah.
Because I think working as the CEO of the exchange is a very, very high pressure job.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs somebody who can withstand that pressure, mm-hmm. very committed, and there has a drive to do it.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of moving parts. You know, you're, it's a national infrastructure. Every day you're in the papers. Every day people are talking about you. So etc. So it's a, it requires adequate compensation. So okay. I think it should get there.
Okay. I want to talk about, because you talk about being very systematic and, you know, one child, one bedroom. And I want to talk about how you built your wealth, right? How you built your wealth or your worth in the financial industry, right? What are the things that you were doing at these different levels? At the levels that you consider, okay, here I moved from level one to level two and I moved from level two to level three. Whatever those benchmarks were for you in your mind, what are the things that you were doing at each of those levels that allowed you to grow into the next role that you were then, I guess, playing in the financial space? Yeah. We can start at, I guess, the one bedroom, one child stage. Yeah.
So, so I think the, I mean, I'll just say back in 1998,
mm-hmm.
I was turning 30,
mm-hmm.
and I asked myself, how long does it take to pay a mortgage?
Mm-hmm.
I said, wow, it takes not less than, for you to actually, that time the retirement age was 55.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, it'll take me 25 years to pay for this one house.
Yeah.
So I said, wow. So I'll retire with one house. If I pay it every month slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So I told myself, okay, what you do? Instead of procrastinating,
mm-hmm.
buy the house. Mm-hmm. Start the journey.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, I got into a bank and I got a mortgage and I bought my first house.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In the middle of that, a couple of years after that,
mm-hmm.
I told myself, no. You can't leave. You can't retire with one house.
Yeah.
Accelerate this.
Mm-hmm.
So I accelerated my mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And I started paying almost 1.5 times, 2 times. Mm-hmm. Get my bonus, accelerate it.
Mm-hmm.
So in another 3-4 years, I was almost at 80%. Down payment. You know, mm-hmm. the trick with mortgage is that if you pay it month on month, mm-hmm. you're paying more interest than principal.
Mm-hmm.
But if you double the payment, the extra amount goes to your principal.
Mm-hmm.
So it reduces it faster.
Yeah.
So at 3 years later, I could buy a second house.
Mm-hmm.
Then went to a SACCO now,
because mm-hmm.
I had not finished this one from the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Went and took another one and bought another house.
Mm-hmm.
And then that, and that started giving me encouragement. And I also had a lot of friends and mentors who tell me, yeah, there's a plot here. Let's put some money here.
Right.
And you stretch yourself.
Right.
In fact, one of my former CEOs was very instrumental. He kept telling me, Jeff, stretch your salary. Every time you get an increment, take a loan. You work for a bank. Stretch. So I never used to enjoy the money.
Yeah.
Every increment, I take another loan. You sort of front load, you load. At the end of the day, that's why I'm telling you, my salary is never used to be.
Yeah.
So that helps. So the real estate was, for me, was a good beginning. That's when I started really investing in real estate.
Yeah.
But parallel to that, of course, being somebody in the financial services sector and the equity markets
mm-hmm.
became an interesting path as well. Mm-hmm. Started buying into stocks, taking some positions there, here and there, bonds as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole universe. So it's a real sacrifice, but mm-hmm. I can tell you, you sacrifice good opportunities, you sacrifice travel, holidays,
mm-hmm.
fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you have got a young family, it's a real sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So it was always squeezing yourself. And at some point, because the way I look at it, and this is an interesting mantra from a wise man, that between 30 and 40,
mm-hmm.
or 30 and 45,
mm-hmm.
is called acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
45 to 60 is consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're acquiring from 45, when are you going to consolidate?
Yeah.
When you're 70?
Yeah.
When are you going to start having fun?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think those are the two. You break that into two, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, so that's what became my path to investments.
Right.
Do I think I've done it? No.
Mm-hmm.
You still feel something is not happening. Your mm-hmm. dreams, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said if your dreams don't scare you,
yeah,
then they're not serious. There's a problem. Dreams, right?
Yeah,
they're not serious. Your dreams must scare you, right?
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Kind of thing.
So I mean that's really interesting, and I think some good something for me to. I mean I'm in between that 30 to 45 acquisition phase. Acquisition phase, and I'm hearing about you taking a mortgage at 30 and trying to figure how you're paying that out, and every time you're getting a bonus, you're getting another loan. I guess does the fact that you are employed and have sort of that job security. I mean, how much did that contribute to your ability to make more money, and then vis-a-vis maybe some of your friends or colleagues who are in entrepreneurship, who potentially, I don't know, obviously, but potentially were making either more or less money than you were at the time, and specifically for people who potentially were making more money, what was, did you have any reflections, you know, at that point? If you're buying, if you are getting a mortgage at 30 and you're looking at your entrepreneurs at 30 and they are, you know,
I know.
Sort of further down that journey, what was that like for you?
You know, sometimes you want to ask the question, did I make the wrong move?
Yeah.
Because I've seen entrepreneur friends of mine who have gone way, way, way beyond.
Yeah.
And they're doing extremely well.
Yeah.
But I think it's a decision point you make, whether you want to work or whether you want to be employed. I think either way it works. You could still be very well invested, very well designed your portfolio over time very well, no matter which way you go. I think money is money. It's just about the discipline. You could be employed, but very poor discipline, and you don't invest, or too much fear that you don't invest. In fact, I think people in entrepreneurship are more courageous. Because they're running their own businesses, which they've set up, and they can take risks. Their risk appetite is much better. So I think either path works, depends on what your own risk appetite is at some point. Let me tell you, the younger you are, you should have a higher risk appetite. You will not acquire things if you don't have the ability to appreciate risk. You can slow down as you age. Because if you start acquiring things at 40, you will be so scared. You know, you want to go for very safe assets. At this stage, you could buy a plot somewhere, and then one day a road comes and opens up that place, and you're a billionaire, you know?
Yeah.
or oil is found somewhere, you know? Yeah. So all those balancing things. I mean, the earlier you can do it, the better.
Okay. I mean, but I want to talk about...
time to make mistakes.
I understand that. I want to ask about the risk element vis-a-vis stretching your salary, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how practical is it? I mean, when you're paying bills, when you're taking care of your girls and your family and all of that, what's the actual day-to-day living situation of saying stretch your salary? When you're saying you've taken two mortgages, are there situations where you don't have money to fuel your car? You don't have money to know where the next X payment is going to come from? And how do you deal with those situations? How did you deal with those situations?
So I think the first thing is that in your budgeting, budgets, take care of the necessities. Eh?
Yeah.
cover your basics, cover your school fees, cover all this. Just have them, the basics.
Yeah.
And then anything else then goes into your investment side. Mm-hmm. All right. So for instance, if you're earning X, suddenly you get an increment in your salary. You don't change your life. Keep it steady. And then, of course, just maybe you can improve it a bit. One extra holiday. But anything above that, push it into an investment. And just have a commitment with your spouse that it's early years, we have to
sacrifice. Put it in. Yeah.
Otherwise, if you want to change your living style, then that's another reason. You won't invest.
Yeah.
But just try to stay focused on what you're used to, and then let anything extra go into it. And that's why for me, checking it off was easier. I said, oh, that extra salary? No, that one.
It's not even there.
Another mortgage is taken. It's not even there.
Yeah.
So let's keep this part. You get it?
Right.
Because it's very easy
to
get that extra amount of money and to change something.
Yeah.
Consumption is a very tricky thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when you want to buy a 75-inch TV. You want to put a few more sounds, etc. It's so easy to fall into that trap.
Right.
But if you can check it off, makes a lot of sense.
Makes sense. Okay. I have two final questions as we wind up, right? At what point in your life, let me actually ask you before I ask you that, what made you most money? Was it your salary or your investment? What's made you the most money in your life?
Wow, it's an interesting one. Okay. I'd say for now it's still the salary.
Okay.
Because now is when I've finished. I'm hoping that my investments will take care of me.
yeah.
I think salary so far.
Yeah, so far salary is what made you the most money. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I haven't really churned my investments. I've just been investing.
Okay, interesting. And that's good because it leads up to my second question, which is, so then in the financial institution, like for anybody who is potentially in the financial space right now and just starting off or in the middle or whatever the case is, because there's only one NCCU, right? There's no, it's not two, it's not three, it's not four. There's only one position that's available there. I mean, what are the things that you did in your career that allowed you to stand out, that even got you into the room for those considerations, and to be able to then make this amount of money that you've made as you know, where you can say, yeah, salary has made me most of my money so far. Mm. Yeah.
I can tell you, how many Kenyans do we have?
Are we 55 million now? Yeah.
What are your chances of getting noticed?
Yeah.
It's a very low probability.
Yeah.
So it's about being bolder.
Mm-hmm.
When I was joining the bank, mm-hmm. one of my objectives was to work very closely with the top leadership
mm-hmm.
in the bank in a number of years. And I told myself, whatever needs to be done, needs to be done.
Yeah.
If something is required of me in mm-hmm. my role,
mm-hmm.
I will do it so well
mm-hmm.
that I'll get noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly you become dependable.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we need to do a divisional strategic mm-hmm. paper. Who can
mm-hmm.
do it?
Mm-hmm.
You stand out. I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You carry out your research. You call all your friends. Let's crack this thing. Then you become dependable.
Yeah.
Then you start getting more assigned into more roles. Eventually you take over. And then
mm-hmm.
working on new opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was in charge of setting up three companies
mm-hmm.
in the bank that mm-hmm. I was working for. And then I was nominated to go and sit on the board of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
At the board of the industry, I got nominated to sit on the board of the mm-hmm. NSE. And from the board of the NSE, I decided to become the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you do not take those opportunities, if you're not bold enough to mm-hmm. stand out of the crowd,
mm-hmm.
then who will notice you?
Mm-hmm.
It's so important to stand out. Be mm-hmm. bold. I mean, you only have one life. It's your life anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if guys criticize you, do you care? That's my life, yeah. Don't be shy of it.
Yeah.
So that's what for me counts.
Yeah.
And just determination to do it.
Yeah.
And also just have the right skill set, and so that nobody questions it.
When
the time for decision making comes, they don't question your skills.
Yeah.
You are ready. You have everything, only that now you're a bit more, you stand out more.
Yeah.
That's what counts.
Interesting. What does hard work mean for you? And I mean this from the perspective of, you know, like you'll watch TED Talks or hear people say, yeah, work hard,
mm.
you know, succeed, work hard, and, you know, be patient and all of those things, and everything will come. But what does working hard, what did working hard actually mean for you? Did it mean you're in the office until 9 p.m.? Did it mean sacrificing time with your family?
Yeah.
Did it mean waking up really early? Like, what does working hard actually mean? And trying to ensure that you stand out.
For me, working hard is a very innate thing. It's something that I embraced very early.
Mm-hmm.
I had a boss who one time told me, have you heard of anybody who died of what? He's in the urology. He was killed by work. I told myself, okay, that's what it means. And so I got used to pressure early.
Yeah.
And I told my boy, whatever needs to be done, needs to be done. So I was an early bird, a late worker.
Yeah.
Continuously for the last 31 years.
Yeah.
I've never been late for work.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Mm-hmm.
I've always tried, unless I'm unwell.
Yeah.
But that's working hard for me showed me results early.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it has never been a challenge at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hard work pays.
Yeah,
that's true. It pays. You see recognition, you see growth, and you see progress.
It pays.
Yeah. So for me, working hard was something I embodied very early.
Yeah,
and I can withstand. Any sort of pressure.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, when faced with a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I do my best, and I say, okay, let the rest just take care of itself.
Yeah.
And things just get resolved.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My last question for today, for this fantastic conversation that I've truly enjoyed. And this, I said I wanted to ask the minute I saw this article, the article that was published around the NSC being the worst performing market in the, I think it was in Africa at the time.
Nobody will ever forget that, gosh.
My question for you, though, is what was that morning like for you? Like, when you wake up that morning and you see that article published, what does it do for you psychologically, mentally, emotionally? You know, what, like, yeah, what does it do for you?
Yeah, so I got news about it at about 10 o'clock in a meeting, when I was in a meeting, and my colleague says, have you seen this? And I was like, oh, okay. Somebody's, Bloomberg is at it again. Mm-hmm. It's not the first time they've written that, by the way.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, fine. It's okay. It'll go away.
Yeah.
Hey, it refused to go away. Because I heard even in Bomas of Kenya, it was being discussed by some politicians and everything. Yeah, that got to me. Mm-hmm. That got to me. Because, in my sort of job, mm-hmm. you're never given the right of reply.
Yeah.
In time.
Yeah.
I mean, you just get a story that hit you in the face. And that was a bit of a shaker. So I was a bit disappointed, of course, mm-hmm. because how many countries do we have in the world? How many exchanges do we have in the world?
Yeah.
What was the criteria of measure? Mm-hmm. What qualification did they give the whole thing?
Yeah.
So I questioned it. Mm-hmm. And we wrote back an article and pushed back on it and say, show us the parameter, show us the data. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to demonstrate ourselves. But it was too late. I mean, it had permeated. I even had a group of students who came in for a student class.
Right.
And they were like, why are you the worst exchange in the world? And I'm it's this far.
Yeah.
So it was quite a damaging day.
Yeah.
Now, the other day, I saw we were the best performing exchange in Africa. How many can remember that? You could even ask me that question. We are now the best performing.
Yeah.
Markets move.
Yeah.
I mean, these are cyclic things. They shouldn't be news.
Yeah.
They're cyclic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I felt it was just a bit of an excitement.
So how did you shake it off? Like, how do you shake it off and be like, yeah, you know, tomorrow is another day, you know, let's get at it?
I've seen so many of those things. Yeah. One time I woke up and found a whole big two-page spread mm-hmm. of the stock market is cheap. The tomatoes, mm-hmm. The stock market is cheaper than a tomato.
Yeah.
Some shares are cheaper than a tomato. Two-page on a Sunday. Draw with nice graphics, my pictures all over the place. And I was like, what's on the next page? So I've learned to shake it off.
Yeah.
I've learned to shake it off. I've never put it to heart. I take it positively.
Yeah.
I encourage you to come and demonstrate. So I challenge the media.
Yeah.
Tell them, no, let's talk about it. Yeah. 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 And they get the point. Some get the point, some don't.
Yeah.
And one time I questioned that worst exchange thing. In my clarification,
yeah.
They even went and made it worse. So I just I just say, okay, cool off.
It's fine.
Yeah, there'll be another story tomorrow. You can't be the only story.
Yeah.
Well, you told it, you've told it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it did cause a bit of damage because we lost a very good client who wanted to list their shares on the exchange. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, let me tell you, that was the most painful part. We had just done a meeting mm-hmm. and we were drawing a timetable mm-hmm. for a new company to come. Mm-hmm. That evening, they called me and told me, hey, this story, we think the timing is bad.
Yeah.
And I was like, come on, guys, I can prove. This is not, we are not the worst, I can prove. I said, we'll come next time.
Yeah.
That's the kind of damage we faced.
And yeah.
It really, really hurt us. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. There's one more. You'll forgive me. One more. I want to ask, how does the NSE make most of its money? Okay. I mean, if you were to break down and say, because I know, I guess, I think that the New York Stock Exchange makes most of its money from the listings and the fees that they are charged there. And then there's the bonds and government stuff that they do. And then there's advisory stuff that they do. So if you like to break down its business model, how the NSE in Kenya, because I think we have
62
companies listed. So how does the NSE make most of its money?
So every time you trade,
the
NSE earns a levy.
Yeah.
For shares, it's 0.12% mm-hmm. of the value. Mm-hmm. So if you trade 100,000, so you get 0.12% of that.
Okay.
Then there's a listing. Okay, so that's the highest. Mm-hmm. That gives us about, that and bonds give us about 50% of revenue.
Okay.
Gives them. I mean, I'm not holding NSE's brief now.
Anymore.
This is ex-NSE. So they get part of that.
Yeah.
Their they also have listing fees, which gives us something. But so the number one is a trading revenue.
Okay.
Secondly is data.
Yeah.
They sell data. So all these price lists, prizes mm-hmm. are monetized. Mm-hmm. There are people who buy them for purposes of structuring portfolios, etc.
Yeah.
So data is the second highest revenue stream. And then we have treasury income and listing fees.
Okay.
That is,
Okay. That I wanted to know for me. But I know. Do you have a final thing you want to say to anybody who might be in the financial space, might want to have a fantastic career in the financial space?
Yeah.
Anything you might want to say to them to be able to achieve that for themselves?
Yeah, I think it's important to... It's never too late to invest. So do not regret if you haven't started. When one bus passes, another one is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be a bigger bus.
Yeah.
So always think of investing as a new learning,
yeah.
And stay true to the course. Once you start investing, just continue investing. Even if you get shocks,
yeah,
just say the next opportunity is coming. The next opportunity is coming. But also use professionals.
Yeah,
yeah. Don't go thinking you know how to do it.
Yeah,
there are professionals who can help you. And let me tell you, just like they say, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. You can't put all your investments in one asset. Diversify.
Yeah.
So have shares, have a property, have bonds, have liquidity so that you can always enjoy the benefits of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's never too late. Warren Buffett started at 11. And why not you?
Yeah.
You know, it's never too late. And new millionaires will keep coming. New companies will keep coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. That was this episode of Financially Incorrect. I hope you guys have learned a thing or two. I really enjoyed the conversation, and we will see you guys on the next episode.